let's say the country music star whose music I like is over here having a big problem with alcohol and drugs or philandering or whatever. I just like the music. It doesn't mean that I dismiss the negative impact that that person's probably having on their friends and family and so on and so forth. But I'm just not that interested in holding public figures to some kind of elevated standard of perfection.
Welcome to The Art of We, the podcast where we explore how committed partnerships can be potent vehicles for fully delivering our gifts to the world. Hi, I'm Krista Vanderveer, a seasoned consultant and executive coach.
And I'm Dr. Will Vanderveer, a leader and educator in integrative mental health and wellness. As husband and wife and business partners, we keep learning that the key to maximizing our authenticity and impact in the world lies inside the health, security, and depth of our relationship.
On this show, we'll pull back the curtains to share lessons, insights, and practices from our own marriage and professional careers that help us thrive. If you're a leader, founder, or overachiever, and you want to leverage your relationships for personal and collective growth, then you're in the right place.
Welcome back to the Art of We podcast. This is episode number 79, part two.
Take three.
That's right. This is our third take on part two of a two-part series on famous people living duplicitous lives and what we think about that.
Well said. Okay, so why don't we get into this? So something came up when we were listening to the New York Magazine article in the car. We were driving. I'm like, we got to listen to this. We got to finish it. And as we're driving and we're listening to it, you're starting to get a little bit triggered in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why is any of this our business? And this was the writer who was speaking about the girlfriend or the fiance, I guess. They were engaged, right?
I think so. Yeah, they were. I think they were engaged. Yeah.
The fiance of Andrew Huberman, who this writer interviewed. And you started to get a little bit reactive because you're like, whoa, why is this any of our business? Now, maybe by the end of the article, things changed for you. I don't know. But I'm curious, this question about public figures and when something comes out, because all of us are human and some of their shadows exposed in different parts of their lives or this, you know, whatever part of life is exposed. Is it our business to know about the private parts of their life that they're not necessarily exposing themselves? So I'm curious what happens for you with that question.
Well, we were talking in take one and take two about this. And I guess I still have the view that if a person who is in a public position and they're performing a function that matters to me, I really care a lot more about the function than I care about what's going on behind the scenes. Now, that doesn't mean that I want to go follow a person who is talking out of two sides of their mouth.
Like not walking their talk.
Not walking their talk. But if the issues that they're having on the side have to do with something that's not a central focus of their public persona or their public message, then I don't really care if, let's say, the country music star whose music I like is over here having a big problem with alcohol and drugs or philandering or whatever. I just like the music. It doesn't mean that I dismiss the negative impact that that person's probably having on their friends and family and so on and so forth. But I'm just not that interested in holding public figures to some kind of elevated standard of perfection.
Right. Well, I think there's two things. Is one, is it our business? And then two, what you just said is having expectations that they're not human and they don't have imperfections and they should be perfect in every single area of their life. So I think that's the second conversation. And if we just go back for a minute about being our business, about their personal lives, public figures' personal lives, I have a very different take on that. I think that especially for the people who are choosing to be in the public eye, we are on some level, not the level of Dr. Huberman and Dr. Macchiarini. I personally think that if somebody's choosing that, then they also have the responsibility to understand that they are then exposing or potentially exposing every area of their life because they are choosing that level of publicity and leadership, and that they should be taking responsibility for role modeling or not role modeling in the other areas of life, how they are acting as a leader or not as a leader. I just personally really feel that that would be a very responsible leader. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have their shadows and they shouldn't be imperfect. I'm saying that they should expect to be probed in every area of their life if they're choosing that level of publicity, is all.
I think it's fair what you're saying, that they should expect that their private lives will be under scrutiny. I totally agree with that. And I guess I'm reminded of a similar situation. This came up, gosh, must be 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, where a group of people got really upset that Charles Barkley was having a lot of success. And he's, you know, former NBA All-Star Olympian, you know, and he's still on TV giving color commentary on basketball games. And people were mad that he was saying things that were incredibly insensitive and provocative, and he's got a big shadow that is not anything we need to talk about today. But the point being that he said back to a group of parents about his personality, raise your own damn kids. I'm not here to be a role model for your kids. I'm here to play basketball and be involved in basketball. And that, of course, made him even more mad. So I do think that both sides can be true at the same time, where the whole thing about being a celebrity is having eyes on you. So of course you're going to be under scrutiny. But on the other hand, it's like, what part of us as a community that made that person a celebrity needs or wants that person to be perfect or to operate at a higher standard than we're willing to operate ourselves personally?
Well, I want to get back to that, but let me ask you this. Why were you starting to get activated at the beginning of the article of the New York Times when you were listening to it in the car?
At the beginning of the article, it sounded like a lover's quarrel where there were all kinds of details about dirty laundry being dragged out in public that were part of a private, intimate dynamic between two people. And that was in the part of the article before all of these other women were brought into the conversation.
Were you triggered by the end of the article in the same sense, in terms of the content of the article and the dirty laundry thing?
The thing that triggered me the most about the article was the one-sidedness of it. There was a sort of accept as fact the perspective of the fiance of Andrew Huberman, rather than beginning with a question about whether the commitments to exclusivity and monogamy were actually in place or not.
Right. Well, it sounded like he had an opportunity to comment on that, but he chose not to comment on any of it. So
he did comment to say on a number of occasions in the article that, we didn't have an agreement about exclusivity until later or something like that.
Yeah. So anyway, we're not going to be arguing the facts of what happened, what didn't happen, because we don't know. But personally, I'm not expecting people not to be human by any means, any stretch of the imagination. But it is important for me, for people that I believe in, people that I want to invest in, people that I vote for, the people that I give money to have a sense of integrity. And by that, I mean, like, they're not going to be perfect, but it's not like this big duplicitous life where it's massively incongruent. For me, I have no interest in giving anything of mine, energy, heart, love, time, money to that person. So I don't know if the facts about Huberman are true or not. And I actually, in preparation, listened to some of his podcasts. And I think that he's very articulate. He's got a lot to offer. And I was like, wow, this is actually pretty amazing what I'm hearing. But personally, I'd rather choose to learn that information from somebody who I believe doesn't have the capacity to lead such a manipulative, potentially, I don't know the facts, and duplicitous life. So that's what's true for me. It doesn't have to be true for you, obviously.
Again, if we accept the allegations as true, I would never go looking for relationship advice from that person. And I've appreciated the content that he's put out over years in different areas around biohacking, but never around relationship.
You don't go to him for your relational advice.
No.
Let's take a quick break. Let's go back to this comment that you said about putting people or celebrities up on elevated expectations or pedestals, so to speak. We'll be right back in a minute and we'll talk about that. We hope you're enjoying this episode. I want to take a quick break to let you know about a gift we created for you and your partner. We compiled our top 10 relationship agreements, agreements that have been so powerful in supporting the success of our partnership that we even turned them into our wedding vows. These agreements help us stay connected, growing, and thriving as a couple, and they've been critical to help us create a kind of we that's way beyond what we've ever experienced before. You can download this free gift at KristaVanderveer.com. That's KristaVanderveer.com. Also, if you enjoy our podcast, it would be so meaningful to us if you left us a rating and review. Not only does it help others find us, but it gives us critical feedback on how we're doing. Thanks in advance, and now back to the episode. Welcome back. So you're talking about something that I actually heard Jason Gaddis talk about on the Relationship School podcast. He recently also did an episode about the Andrew Huberman situation. I would definitely recommend it. We'll put it in the show notes. He was talking about the same thing that you were, which is having elevated expectations for people that we look up to, or celebrities or public figures. So I want to hear more about what you think is wrong with that and why that's a misstep.
Let's just take a hypothetical. Now, we should just say that this is very hypothetical, because I'm going to use a metaphor of people who like to go to really fancy, like foodies who like to go to fancy restaurants, and we're not that couple, but I think it's a good analogy. Let's say we book reservations at a really amazing place, and it's 6 months out, and we're traveling to New York to go to this incredible chef, and we can't wait. And right before the food comes out, I say, before we take this meal, I really want to know, what is the relationship field like for this chef before I can feel good about eating the meal that they're going to serve us? It's going to be really important to me to know what this famous chef is like in relationship before I can eat their food.
Okay.
Do you really want to know the answer to that question? Maybe another way to say it is, like, if I want to get optimized in a particular area of my life, I'm going to go to the person who I think can help me with that. I'm not going to go to the person who maybe can help me with a different area, but can't help me with that area. So that's where I'm coming from in my point of view here. It's just all I wanted to say about it.
That makes sense. And I think this thing about, well, I guess what Jason was making, and John DeMartini, we've spoken about him in other episodes. He's been a mentor of ours, for sure. He's a teacher. And he also talks about this. So it's basically the way John DeMartini talks about it, and Jason talked about it in his podcast, was going from pedestal to pit. So it's like, oh my gosh, that person is amazing. They're so great. They have so much to offer. And it's this assumption that in every area of their life, they're so great and have so much to offer.
Yeah, and you can see this arc in so many different celebrities, right?
Right.
Sinead O'Connor, rising star, and then she insults the Pope on the Saturday Night Live show, and then it's just, she's in the toilet after that.
And then she's in the pit by so many people, right?
Totally.
Yeah. So what's important here is that you and I really stand for it being okay that people have shadows and imperfections. We both do. We reveal them here on the podcast. We work with them together. We're really about human development and human growth. And any expectations that we have, like the chef who should also have an amazing relationship because his food is amazing, you know, obviously it would be really hard to live life that way, where we're like, okay, well, are you in integrity at home? Otherwise, we're not going to shop at your store or your store or your store. But we may not go to a chef who has been outed that he's got a duplicitous life. I probably wouldn't want to go to his restaurant if I found that out. So,
right. Well, that chef wouldn't be living in your values.
That's right. Other people might be fine with that.
Right.
Maybe other people who are living duplicitous lives would actually go there to eat at his restaurant, because he's like, this guy's amazing. He knows how to do it.
Right. Yeah. It could be a restaurant called Duplicitous Lives or something like that.
There you go.
But I think it's also important that we look at what in the human psychology wants to tear down people who have achieved a certain level of fame or influence or status.
Yeah. So let's talk about that part. Is there a part of you that's ever wanted to do that before?
Well, I'm not talking about Andrew Huberman's harem of women who didn't know they were in a harem. I'm talking about the people who don't know Andrew Huberman, like us, who are talking a lot about Andrew Huberman right now. And there's an awful lot of them who are, in my opinion, trying to tear him down and pull him down off the pedestal. But what is that about human nature that wants to tear people down who have achieved a certain level of success in their effort that they're placing in their particular area of their own values?
Well, I love the question. And I'm going to bring in Elise Lonen, who is an author. She's a podcaster. She came out with this book recently that is on my bedside. And the book name is On Our Best Behavior. And when you said that, what came up for me is one of the things that she brought that she had heard from somebody else, but she brings this into the book, is that concept of envy And usually we have envy when we see somebody doing something that's within our values that is of greater achievement or success than we currently have. And I don't know the term well enough to say that this is accurate, but I feel like unchecked, unrealized envy could potentially turn into something that then becomes trying to shut the person down or take them down or tear them down, rather than seeing envy as an understanding that this person is actually living to the values of what I want in my life. And maybe that's inspiration for me to go get that rather than the impetus or the action to take them down or tear them down. That's what comes up for me when you say that. But I'm wondering what you think about that.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. Let me ask you a question. How would you describe the part of us that experiences envy? What part of us is that versus perceiving a successful person and their particular values that we share with them that inspires us?
Well, I kind of see it as the same part with a different perspective. It's either like the glass is half empty or the glass is half full. If I want to tear down the person, I'm seeing it as they have something I want and there's not enough to go around.
I remember at one point looking at the difference between jealousy and envy, and it's really interesting to look at that because one way to define it, and this is not the only way, but the way I understand it is jealousy is wanting something that another person has, and envy is wanting to destroy what that person has, wanting for that other person not to have the thing. So it's more aggressive than jealousy.
Right. And jealousy, I believe, has to do with a third object. Like jealousy inside of a partnership. I'm jealous that there's this person, for example, who you're attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that I want to be that person, which might be envy.
No, envy is what I want to kill that person.
I don't know. I think people are defining it in different ways.
We'll take it offline.
There are people who describe the differences really well.
Yeah.
I don't think we're doing a good job. But before we wrap, though, and before we give our prediction about Huberman, because we promised that too, what part of you wants to take down rather than healthfully compete with somebody when you see or feel envy?
It's an impotent victim part of me that wants to take away someone else's success that I may or may not actually want for myself.
Oh, you may not even want it.
No, I just want them not to have it.
Okay. How old is this part? Is he still playing with Legos?
Very young, earlier than that. Yeah, it's primitive aggression. All I'm saying is every person on the planet has a victim inside of them. Now, some people, it's more forward. Some people, it's smaller, but it's there. And if we don't acknowledge it and work with it consciously, then we see more of the things that these two episodes of our show are really about, which is acting things out that are harmful to other people.
Definitely. Well, thank you. Well said.
One thing I really appreciate about Elise Lonin, the book that you're reading that I haven't read at all, is organizing her book around the seven deadly sins. I think these are really, really interesting themes to look at in human psychology. So I would like to consider with you the possibility of doing a series on these different aspects of the human mind or the human psychology. Okay, I said my piece.
I like the idea. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
Okay, so I have a prediction about what's going to happen with the Huberman situation. This New York Times Magazine article came out, obviously. He chose to respond to some things in the article, but mostly was like not responding. As far as the recording date of this podcast episode, I have not seen any kind of response from him. Here's what I think is going to happen is I think that he is not going to respond and it's going to get forgotten and get blown over. And then he's going to go back. He's going to keep doing his podcast. He's going to keep doing all the things he's doing. And he's not going to address publicly anything in the article. Now, do I wish he would do something differently? Yes. But that's what my prediction is.
What would you like him to do?
Well, I'm going to bring in Elise here again because I'm following her on Instagram. And she had some really articulate thoughts. She articulated some really deep thoughts about this. And what I appreciated her saying is that there aren't any role models out there for this particular example where there's a man or a woman living a duplicitous life. Let's say it's all true. It comes out. The person publicly owning it in some form and committing to do the deep work to change it. I don't feel like there's the role models out there. I haven't seen any. I agree with Elise about that. what I would like him to do, and she also said this, is to go and do deep work, to go find men's groups, to go heal with some of the leading relational psychological therapists, being very articulate, but to go do his work. And I had another friend who I was talking about this with, and she's like, often people who are labeled a sociopath or on a high extreme spectrum of a narcissist don't really get to the point of wanting to do the work because they don't have the empathetic tools or compassion inside themselves to even understand the level of impact they're having. So why would they go do work if they're not being impacted in that way? And I thought that was an interesting perspective too.
Right. I agree. That would be a very refreshing and inspiring response. And I think that there are ways to own things without inviting further legal action or, you know, negative consequences. But I also understand the at least initial response of no response that is happening right now. But I second that emotion. I think that would be lovely for him to role model stepping into a higher level of maturity and responsibility.
Right. We'll see what happens. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Will, for diving into this conversation together. Thank you, listener, for being on this ride with us. I think that there's so much here that we could get into that we can unpack. There's so many different perspectives. And if you have any particular thoughts about this that you want to share with us, we totally welcome it. We're obviously geeking out about all of this, and we look forward to hearing anything that you have to share with us to expand our perspectives and to know you better.
For sure. Please do let us know how you're impacted by this exposition.
You can reach us at kristavanderveer.com or feel free to leave a comment or review on your favorite podcast platform. Okay. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll talk with you next week. Thank you so much for joining us. If you found this content valuable, please follow this show and share it with your partner or other key collaborators. If the show sparked an interesting conversation based on these topics, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Instagram at Art of We Podcast.
And we'll see you next time when we explore what it means to be better together, like butter and toast, on the Art of We.